This session is part of a webinar series which aims to assist researchers, librarians, and institutions in the adoption of digital tools and persistent identifiers for a significant increase of research discoverability globally and to increase efficiency in scholarly workflows.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to our webinar series today. And we have another interesting session today. And as you know, we are doing a webinar series on open science and discoverability of research in Africa. My name is Kelezo Masisi. I'm from Africa Archive, and I'm the project coordinator there. And I'm here with my team hosting the webinar today. Just a bit of background. Africa Archive is a community-led digital archive for African research and communication, and we enhance visibility and discoverability of African research. So on today's talk, we have our speakers, Maria Guerrero, Sarah Lippincott from Dryad, and they'll be speaking on the topic of data sharing, best practices for researchers and institutions. So before we continue, I'd like to give you a background of our speakers today. I'll start with Maria Guerrero. Maria Guerrero is the head of partnership development at Dryad. She's an open science enthusiast with over 10 years of experience in academic publishing, and she loves working with research communities to drive positive change in scholarly communication. Maria is goal-oriented with a strong relationship-building foundation and experience in strategic planning, publishing, and journal development, community management and outreach partnership development, peer review management, and event programming. And we have Sarah Lippincott. Sarah Lippincott is a librarian and library consultant with a decade of experience supporting open access digital scholarship and scholarly communications through strategic planning, research service design, facilitation, and communications work. As head of community engagement at Dryad, Sarah works with institutions, funders, and researchers to increase awareness of and engagement with data sharing and data reuse. She received her MLS from University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, and prior to joining Dryad, she worked in a variety of roles within and adjacent to libraries. Sarah started her career as the founding program director for the Library Publishing Coalition and went to coordinate assessment, user experience, and strategic planning activities for a major research library, led strategic consulting services for a digital services agency specializing in open source web development for the cultural heritage sector, and consulted on projects for the Educopier Institute, the Next Generation Library Publishing Project, the Library Publishing Coalition, Candid, the Preservation of Electronic Government Information Project, the Association of Research Libraries, and the Digital Public Library of America. Once again, I'd like to thank you all for joining us today. It's once again going to be another interesting talk and discussion, and I'll give the floor to the speakers. Maria?
Thank you so much, Kelezo, for the introduction, and thank you, Joe and Ebukapur, for inviting us to speak with you today. So Sarah and I have prepared a few slides. Our expectation is that we will need roughly 35 or 40 minutes or so. So I hope that we'll have plenty of time to also hear from you, not only questions and comments about our presentation, but also having an open dialogue on what you think are the challenges you're facing, the priorities, and how infrastructure services like Dryad, but also others in the research data sharing space can help with open science, with this open science movement. So without further ado, I'll go ahead and share my screen. Can I confirm that you can see the slide deck? All right.
Yes.
Perfect. Thank you, Kelezo. As Kelezo said, we were hoping to illustrate today how Dryad is working in the best practice ecosystem to encourage researchers and institutions with the practice of sharing data in the open. So to kind of get us going, we thought we would let you know what is Dryad. So Dryad is an open data publishing platform. We publish research data primarily associated with peer review publications, but also we also host research data that are generated by researchers, for example, at universities and institutions. But more importantly than that, we're also a community of stakeholders in the research ecosystem, ranging from researchers themselves to scholarly societies, publishers, institutions, and funding agencies who are committed with the practice of sharing data in the open to be available for the global audience, but are also thinking about how to leverage on this corpus of research data that is made publicly and globally available to really think on how that can be reused to really minimize waste in research. So that's something that I appreciate that we're all really caring about these days. So in the data publishing ecosystem, Dryad is what it is considered an interdisciplinary data publishing platform that aims to serve all research domains. So we're a generalist data publishing platform. We were founded by active researchers. So there was a group of investigators in ecology and evolutionary biology in particular that were keen to make research data underpinning the publications they were seeing at their society journals publicly available. And they wanted to do that themselves to really encourage the practice of making research data underpinning peer-reviewed articles publicly available to ensure the validation of the scientific record and really maximize the possibility of replication and reproducibility. So they got together and partnered with a research institute in North Carolina to provide kind of the infrastructure and technological development for the platform. So since the very beginning, we've been closely attached to the research community, actually producing research data. And by doing that, we've always been wanting to really respond to the needs and the challenges that that researchers face and address their needs. So by virtue of that, since the very beginning, that Dryad has also made the commitment to remain, and we are a not-for-profit organization, and we're community governed. So we operate on a membership program primarily with scholarly societies that have a publications program, publishers and research institutions, and to really allow the open practice of sharing data. The figures you can see on the slide are just to kind of give you a sense of the breadth and the size of the organization. So since since 2008, when we started actively publishing data sets, we've published over 60, I think it's now 65,000 unique data publications. So we'll share with some visuals with you shortly, representing the work of over 200,000 researchers from all around the globe. And in many cases, also associated with more than 1,200 different academic journals. So really to kind of give you a sense of how Dryad has been trying to really touch upon the various points of the research data ecosystem and practice of sharing data. So as I mentioned, we have a membership program in the institutions, publishers, and societies, and we provide various resources to that community that use Dryad to share data. But as I had mentioned before, we're also a community, and we do see that our role in the scientific community at large is also to provide educational resources that can empower people to share data or to encourage researchers they work with to do this in a responsible and an open way. So along these lines, we provide training for our members, but we also produce various informational resources. So for example, Sarah often produces pieces for our blog, which is publicly and openly available. And anyone can also subscribe to our newsletter, where we provide updates on the data that we're publishing, but also on some of these educational materials or initiatives that Dryad may be running for publishers, for example, around how to enable or encourage the peer review of research data as part of the publication process. So these are just some kind of examples of some of the materials we have produced in our blog and that are publicly available. So this one is around why Dryad only uses the public domain dedication license to share data, and why that is really in the spirit of lowering the barriers to enable further reuse. And another example is around what we do with curation of the data. So I believe Sarah and I will tell you a bit more about that later in the presentation, and how the context and the underpinning metadata around research data is important to really enable reuse. So as part of our submission process, we encourage researchers to provide a README file describing the details of what is the data, what were the methodologies used to collect it. Is there any software that people need to have installed to run the data? And we produce various blog posts around kind of how to make that README file as comprehensive, as detailed as possible, so that researchers have the tools they need to really do this in an easy way. We know that they're busy, and this needs to be something simple, but also to really think about how this can potentiate others to be able to reuse the data and interrogate and make new research findings. These are also some additional materials that we make available to our members. So some leaflets that they can distribute to their own institutions around how Dryad is ensuring compliance with the various funder mandates around research data sharing, primarily in terms of preservation, storage, but also on curation of the data, and why people should use Dryad. As I mentioned before, we are also integrated within the research publishing ecosystem. So we have various integrations based on email or APIs that enables journals to partner with Dryad. And what happens is when a researcher submits a paper, for example, to WeLife, they are encouraged to make the data, they need to make the data publicly available if that's legally possible. And the publisher then connects with Dryad automatically so that the researcher can deposit the data with Dryad. The data is available for peer review. And then when the related manuscript and the data are publicly available, post-publication, they get automatically interconnected. So really to maximize the chances of giving credit by the various contributions that the researchers produce, but also ensuring that the whole kind of net of contributions are connected so that funders know and institutions know as well. And in most cases, yeah, journals partner with Dryad because they want to empower researchers to share the data if they have the policies. They feel that it's their responsibility to also provide the tools that enable researchers to do that. But importantly, they want to ensure that the publications they're producing are rigorous and can be reproduced. So it's also very much in the spirit of promoting research integrity practices and enabling reproducibility. So the examples you can see popping up on the slide now are just of some journals and organizations that use Dryad. So for example, the American Association for the Advancement of Science that publish science partner with Dryad really because they were thinking about how they can enable the reproducibility of the scientific record and ensure rigor in what they publish. And another organization that has recently also elected Dryad as a trusted partner to enable data sharing was the Federation of American Societies in Experimental Biology, FASEB. I would briefly like to kind of take a step back and give you a bit more context around the difference between generalist repositories of data publishing platforms like Dryad and specialist data repositories. And I believe that in your role, you've probably interacted with both at this point. So organizations like Dryad that are in the generalist bucket usually are a good conduit to publish heterogeneous and interdisciplinary data. Often they also provide a home for data that doesn't have a home elsewhere. So for example, in a subject-specific repository. Generalist repositories are also a good way to facilitate broad and easy discovery. They can also open the doors for a wider audience to research data. So because the data is interdisciplinary, it's more heterogeneous. So for example, a student, a master's student, or potentially someone in industry may want to access the data, and the access is much broader, and the nature of the data itself is probably of more usability for those as well. Similarly, generalist repositories, for example, Dryad, may also support custom data and can also link to content managed elsewhere. So, for example, Dryad can also integrate with CRIS systems to manage the research outputs in institutions. And often they are free to use, there may be certain limits. Conversely, specialist repositories are usually optimized to address a very specific disciplinary need. So it may be because researchers want to share genomic structures and there is a particular kind of expertise that is needed to curate that data and may make it available. So usually they're very niche. They enhance discovery and reuse by using what it is considered to be very disciplinary specific metadata. And as I mentioned before, because they are addressing a very particular niche, usually the file formats are also addressing that particular point. So the communities, the scientific communities will know that there is a specific file format and type for that kind of, for example, chemistry compound data. So that's not the kind of data that we would traditionally publish on Dryad. Often they support visualization or analysis for those particular very specific kinds of data. But they importantly, and I think that's where there is some alignment with organizations like Dryad, they often serve as community hubs and create best practice for sharing those kinds of files and data types. So in this ecosystem, Dryad is one of the generalist data publishing platforms, but other names that you may recognize, like Zenodo, Open Science Framework, Figshare, Mendeley, and Dataverse also operate in this space. And on the subject-specific or specialist repositories, some names that you may have come across before as well is the Gene Expression Omnibus for genomics data, FlyBase, Pangea, GenBank, and Protein Data Bank, again, really addressing for very particular file types for specific disciplines. So at Dryad, as a generalist data publishing platform, we do care about curation. So that's something that specialist repositories have been really great at doing, curating very specific data. But since the very beginning that at Dryad, we've also understood the need of providing the context and the additional information that may enable connections. So by virtue of that, and really thinking about how to maximize reuse all the data at Dryad, as well as the metadata, is curated by a team of human specialists that download all the data files, ensure that they can be open, and ensure that anyone wanting to reproduce the data will have plenty of descriptive information to enable that. The data gets assigned a DOI as soon as a researcher submits a data set with us, and then is fully minted when the data set is published. The data is permanently stored at various physical locations in Europe and in the US. As I indicated before, all the content we publish is available under the Creative Commons Public Domain Dedication License, primarily because we want to ensure that there are no barriers hindering reuse. So, for example, if the data set produced by colleagues in South America and there is another researcher in India looking into the same problem, they can simply go to Dryad and get the data at no additional hurdle to analyze it and reprocess it if they want to. And all our code is publicly available, but also the data and the metadata is available through our open API. So this means that we can integrate with other services, but also if there is a computational biologist that wants to access various data sets at Dryad, they can do that simply with an API integration. We thought this group might be curious to know what has been the traction and usage amongst the researchers based in Africa. So to date, we've published 4,245 data publications, so data sets from researchers based in Africa. And what you can see on the right, the table represents the geographical distribution by country where the researcher is affiliated. And interestingly, it seems that the data is also being used and accessed by people in Africa. So we have roughly 6,000 website visits from African countries just in the past year. So really interested in learning, for example, your feedback around the distribution by country and how this may resonate in terms of where you see the specific communities at different countries kind of embracing open science practices and sharing data in particular. So on the topic of data sharing, over to you, Sarah.
Thanks very much, Maria. So as the figures that Maria showed, demonstrate that we do already have quite a bit of uptake from researchers in Africa, but we're lagging a little bit behind that proportion of data sets that Dryad has that are produced by researchers in Africa falls a little bit below what we would expect based on the volume of research output from Africa. So we want to encourage researchers in Africa to get involved and get started with Dryad. So the first thing to know about Dryad is that we're open to all researchers around the world, regardless of their institutional affiliation. As Maria mentioned, we have a membership program that allows universities and publishers to support to cover the costs for their stakeholders to publish with Dryad, but we are also open to any researcher. And we encourage researchers from around the world to take advantage of the infrastructure that we provide. So individual researchers don't need a Dryad membership. Instead, we charge a data publishing fee that covers the curation, publishing, and permanent archiving of up to 300 gigabytes of data. And researchers also benefit from the support of our curation team, who help ensure that the data is findable, accessible, interoperable, and reusable, or FAIR. Logging into Dryad is easy. We use ORCID for our login process. If you're not familiar with ORCID already, it is an identifier for researchers. It's a unique identifier that helps them unambiguously affiliate publications with researchers. So researchers can use an existing ORCID ID or create a new one for free in order to access our submission system. And the data sharing and publishing process at Dryad helps researchers comply with open access and data sharing policies around the world, including those that have been implemented in Africa, such as Ethiopia's open access policy, which went into effect in 2019 and which mandates sharing of data in accordance with international FAIR data principles. Ethiopia's policy, among others, reflects a growing push around the world to move beyond simple data archiving. And it's something that Dryad is uniquely well positioned to support because of our attention to metadata standards, our curation process, and our mission to enable data reuse. Next slide, please, Maria. Every step of our process at Dryad is designed to support FAIR data principles. We make data findable by providing a digital object identifier, or DOI, for every data set that we publish, and ensuring that our data sets can be discovered through major aggregators like Google and Google Scholar. Researchers who want to cite or reuse Dryad data can find it in all of these different places across the web, like including Scopus and Web of Science, public search engines like Google and Google Dataset Search. So it's not only discoverable on the Dryad platform, but across the internet. We make data accessible to anyone around the world through our website at datadryad.org and to humans and machines through our open API. And we encourage file organization practices, such as limiting individual files to 10 gigabytes, that help to ensure that researchers with access to varying internet speeds and computing equipment can successfully download and interact with our data. We make our data interoperable by ensuring that it's well described with standardized community accepted metadata. We use the DataCite metadata schema for our metadata. This is a widely adopted metadata schema that's useful for describing the general characteristics of a data set, like its creators and funders and related outputs. We also use, wherever possible, persistent identifiers to unambiguously identify a data set's creators, funders, related research outputs, and again, to standardize that metadata and make it compatible with discovery systems and repositories all around the world. And finally, we make data reusable by applying Creative Commons licenses, the CC0 license that removes any legal barriers to reuse, as well as ensuring that all data is well described and has a README file that explains the data collection and processing methods, defines the variables, and provides any other context that's needed to interpret the data set. And our curation team that Maria and I have both mentioned before is really at the core of all of this. They are there to support this whole process by manually reviewing each and every submission to make sure that it meets our metadata and data file quality standards. Next slide. Here's what the average published data set looks like on Dryad. Each data set is accompanied by all the metadata that we collect during the submission process, including the information about the data creators and the any accompanying research outputs, related research outputs, an abstract that describes the data itself and what it was used for in its original for the original purpose of the data collection. A data citation. We always suggest a citation because we want to encourage the practice of citing research data when it's reused. And you can also download the data files either as a whole package or individually from this page. We connect each of these metadata elements through persistent identifiers wherever possible. So we use the ORCID ID to identify the author unambiguously so that authors with similar names or the same name can receive credit for the proper publications. And so that authors can easily find, so that we can easily attribute data sets to the correct authors. We use research organization registry identifiers to standardize our institutional affiliations so that we can easily identify all of the data sets that are generated by researchers at the University of Cape Town, for example, and that research administrators at the University of Cape Town can automatically identify all of the data sets produced by their researchers and harvest them into their researcher information system or into a local data repository. We harvest, we provide a DOI for every published data set, as I mentioned, and we also collect DOIs or other persistent identifiers to related research outputs that provide context, such as links to research articles and research software, as in this case here, or even links to preprints. We'd love to see more preprints come with associated data as part of, you know, as an essential part of that transparency and the ability for the community to review. We're starting to see that evolve and have more data sets that are appropriate, that are associated with preprints deposited with Dryad. And finally, we also use research organization registry IDs to identify funders. So again, funding agencies can see the impact of their funding and track compliance with any data sharing policies they have, and also see how their data is being made available to researchers around the world to reuse. Speaking of data reuse, I want to emphasize that Dryad is not only a place for researchers to share their data, but it's a place to come find data. We make over 60,000 well-described data sets available in a wide range of disciplines for reuse. Every last one of these is free to download and reuse without restriction. And researchers looking for data relevant to their area of study can do keyword searches on the platform for relevant terms. They can browse by subject or location. So for example, I've provided the links to the filters for data that has a geolocation of Africa or of Madagascar. You can browse by institution by using the research organization registry ID for that institution. So I've linked to an example search for Addis Ababa University, and you'll see all of the research data sets that we have affiliated with researchers from that institution. And again, the data is also discoverable not only on Dryad's platform, but in relevant aggregators across the web. Promoting data reuse is a key part of Dryad's mission, and Maria has already talked a little bit about how reusable open data promotes scientific integrity by providing evidence to support research findings and enabling experts to interrogate and validate and reproduce findings. And we also know that access to open data can accelerate discovery by enabling collaboration and real-time sharing of knowledge. We saw a compelling example of this during the early days of the COVID-19 pandemic. Dryad, for example, has COVID-related data sets dating from as early as April 2020, which helped to, help to enable the sharing of high-quality information that can be translated into public health measures or used in the development of vaccines. So we saw the kind of direct impact of data sharing and reuse. And open data also can promote innovation and economic opportunity. We have a wide range of data that can be repurposed for the development of new products or for the enhancement of economic opportunity. And finally, our open data collection allows researchers around the world to work with data that they might not be able to generate themselves. They don't have the resources or the equipment or the time, or they want to, as Maria said, reduce waste in the research process by utilizing data that has already been generated by others. On Dryad, we have data that are relevant to a range of in a range of disciplines that are relevant to that are related to Africa, to various countries across the continent. So we have social sciences data, like this data set on community-based health insurance enrollment trends in Ethiopia. Epidemiology data, the effectiveness of malaria prevention measures in Senegal, agriculture data, forensic data or forensic genomics data. And we also have data that is not specific to Africa at all, but has global relevance for researchers. We have reference data sets that are widely used in specific disciplines, like this Worldwide Wood Economics Spectrum data set, which has been consistently our most consulted data set. It's an ecology data set that's used by researchers in ecology worldwide. This neuroscience data set that collected data from hundreds of different neural images to examine the basis of individual differences in cognition. So this is a large reference data set that could be repurposed for a wide range of studies in neuroscience. Or this bibliometrics data set that examined decision bias in selecting which manuscripts get published in PLOS ONE. Again, you can imagine a range of other ways that you might reuse this data that was collected from this bibliometric data. And all of these data sets, in all of these data sets, to make them reusable, it is more than just handing us the data file and completing some basic metadata. The thing that really makes Dryad data different is the context that we provide around each data set. This kind of context can come from related research artifacts, like the links to the primary article or research software needed to run analyses on the data. Data management plans even can contain essential context, and we often have those attached to our data sets as well. We require this README file to be uploaded with every data set that describes the data collection methods, defines all of the variables, provides all of that rich information that another researcher would need to interpret the data. Next slide, Maria. And finally, just to reiterate, the other thing that makes Dryad really special, that makes us work well for authors, that makes us work well to help researchers comply with open access and open data sharing policies, and what makes our data really powerful for reuse and accelerating scientific discovery, is this curation and publishing process. Every data set published with us undergoes this hands-on curation process with our team of curators to evaluate the metadata and data files to ensure that they are ready and suitable for sharing, that metadata is sufficient to support reuse, that data files can be opened and interpreted, And also to protect against sharing and uploading of data that is not appropriate for broad distribution, identifiable personal and personally identifiable information, for example. We don't publish anything, while we do publish human subjects data, we don't publish anything that could reveal information about a specific individual. We're really careful about how we publish information on endangered species, whether those are animals or plants, or on around indigenous populations. So our curation team is really sensitive to all of these issues, making data and metadata that is appropriate for sharing ready and easy to reuse, and ensuring that we don't publish anything that isn't appropriate for broad sharing. Next slide. I also want to emphasize that we are here to help. We are a small and really friendly team that is really is committed to the, to our mission and is committed to helping researchers. You can get help and support with Dryad. Researchers who want to upload data, their best point of entry is our help desk, help@datadryad.org, if they have any questions or problems in the submission process. And for institutions and publishers and others who are just interested in getting more information about Dryad or have questions for me or Maria, general inquiries can come to hello@datadryad.org. And last slide, Maria. Just a thank you for us and a reminder of some of those important email addresses. You can also contact Maria or myself directly with any questions that we don't have time to address today. And I'll stop there and see what questions you all have for us.
Thank you so much, Sarah. Thank you so much, Maria, for such an informative presentation. I think right now I'll just take questions from the audience, questions or comments. I think we can do two at a time, and then, you know, the answers for the sake of time. And you can also type in your questions in the chat as well, so that we can see those. And also in the meantime, I also read some questions that I have as well. You can raise your hand or just ask. Bookie, do you have a question? Okay. I don't think he or she can hear us. Bookie, do you have a question? Okay. I think in the meantime, I'll just read a question that I have now. So I have a question of a researcher who is asking about the trainings. I think Maria touched on those that you have for researchers and institutions regarding the submissions. What sort of trainings do you have? It's just a question from one of the
audience. Do you want to address that one, Sarah, since you're the one primarily delivering those?
Sure. So we offer a regular kind of Dryad 101 fundamentals, how that walks through the submission process, so researchers know exactly what to expect, how to log in, what kind of metadata they'll need to provide, how to upload files, all of that that information, as well as the bigger picture. When is Dryad a good choice and a good fit for their data, and some of the recommended best practices for Dryad. As Maria mentioned, we make a lot of materials available on our blog. We also have a good data practices section on our website that walks through all of the specific things that we recommend, how we recommend researchers organize their files to make them easy for others to interpret. You know, even things like how to, like, crafting a good title for your data set. What are the kinds of ways that you can make sure that that you're adding metadata that will help discovery and reuse of the data. And we always announce any public webinars and trainings on our blog and through our newsletter. So those are the best ways, as well as social media. We have social media accounts on currently on Twitter, X, Mastodon, Blue Sky, LinkedIn, and Facebook. So there's a number of ways to follow us and make sure that you stay up to date with what we're offering.
Okay, great. So we have a series of like available platforms where you can also access information. I'm just gonna check if we have any questions from the chat. So I'll be coupling those with what I'm receiving as well on my end. One will be what are the challenges that you think maybe researchers from Africa might face when they're trying to use a platform or transitioning to this open data sharing practices, you know? Because I think in our last webinar we touched on those again. Maybe if you could just clarify maybe the solutions that an African researcher may approach while they're facing those challenges.
Maybe I can start and you add your thoughts as well, Sarah. So I would say that something that a concern that goes beyond the African region and that does seem to be still transversal is that some people still have some apprehension around the idea of sharing data, right? So unless they have it is a requirement from a journal where they want to publish that says you need to make your data publicly available, people still feel that they may get scooped. So for example, I appreciate that it's a similar concern that I've heard from other African colleagues around preprints, that by making the findings publicly available, are my chances of getting published, let's say, on a Nature journal lowered if a rich lab in the West takes away my data and analyzes it quicker than I can do and then gets a publication. So I would say that an argument that is also used in kind of in preprint advocacy is that by making your research output publicly available and getting it at the DOI, it also sets a precedence that you were the ones kind of doing that. You get a DOI, it gets indexed on your ORCID ID as well. So there is a stamp of validation that associates that finding with your contributions. So I would say that, yeah, really the direction of travel to potentially tackle the issue of fear of scooping is actually being transparent and open and having a signal that indicates the credit for the work that you'd produce. Sarah, you probably also know the institutional landscape quite well, better than I do. What would you say, kind of, have some of the issues that institutions may face?
I think, as Maria said, I think a lot of these are kind of universal issues and not necessarily particular to researchers in Africa. I think a big one is that researchers don't generally get the training that they need in order to be able to share data in a reusable way, to describe their data collection methods, and define their variables and create that contextual document in the README file or the other context that's provided with the data set to make it reusable. That's a skill. It's not self-evident, and it's not something that is typically taught in your graduate program. And many institutions around the world are not adequately providing that kind of training and information to researchers. So many of them are new to this process, and that's again part of the strength of having our curation team look at data sets, because they are trained to do that. They work with researchers every day around the world to help them improve that information. They can advise in really specific ways on improving the metadata and information that's provided with data sets. That remains our number one challenge. That's the most common reason that our curation team sends data sets back to researchers before they publish them, is to request more information in the README file. But they'll give very specific guidance and help on doing that. So I think there's still just a long way to go in that kind of data sharing literacy space.
And I will also just say, Colette, I see that we have a few questions coming up, that another issue is also that some researchers that still feel that it's not yet entirely clear on why they should be doing this. So some people feel, okay, it's just for the sake of good practices and open science. So I think collectively, and I think there is a question around that, how we can also kind of have metrics that really showcase how data is being reused by other people if policymakers are using it. But generally, there also needs to be a collective effort from the funder side, right? When people submit a grant application, to ensure that people won't get money just because they published on Nature, right? A Nature paper. That also all the wide range of contributions, like making a preprint available, sharing data in the open, are also recognized. So we've seen some movements. So, for example, Plan S, it's a group you may be familiar with as well, are thinking about how funders collectively can expand evaluation process beyond just a high profile publication. But it's something that open infrastructure like Dryad and organizations like Africa Archive can really play a role in advocating for what suits the research community best. But sorry, I know I won't be mindful of time.
No problem. I think we have another like two questions from the chat. Maybe we could quickly just two questions before we wrap up. One is from Lydia. She says, "Thank you for the presentation. Kindly explain more on ROR and the possible funders." So that's from
And take that one.
Lydia.
Sure. So the Research Organization Registry is it's a registry. It's an index of all of funding organizations around the world. So ROR maintains this list of both research performing organizations, so universities and research institutes and even government agencies, as well as funding organizations, philanthropic organizations, private philanthropic organizations, public government agencies around the world. So they have tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of entities, research performing entities and research funding entities in their database. They collect basic information about those entities. Like where they're located and what their website and some other kind of basic metadata, and they assign them a persistent identifier. It's like a DOI, but for research organizations. And then we can use those to make sure that we can consistently and persistently identify those organizations when they are related to a Dryad data set. So they're always expanding. I mean, it's a never-ending project to keep collecting all of these funders. So when researchers submit a data set to Dryad and they start typing their funder into the box, it'll start to auto-complete with our list that's pulled in from ROR. In some cases, maybe it's a funder that hasn't yet been added to ROR. They can override that controlled list and add in, the funder if it's for some reason isn't already in ROR.
Okay, thank you very much, Sarah. I think Jocelyn has typed another question. Maybe I could just read that for both of you as well. So Jocelyn says, "Thank you for the presentation. On the issue of reusability, are there ways you're using to monitor if other researchers are using the data sets besides downloads and views?" So that's from Jocelyn Shigwada. So she'd like to know if there are any ways you're monitoring the use of the data that's being taken from the site.
Maria, I can take this one as well, unless you'd like to.
Sure. Yes, that's good.
So this is a really challenging area, and no one has quite solved this yet. Dryad doesn't have the solution, unfortunately. We do also collect data citations. This is an imperfect metric for a variety of reasons. First being that not everybody is citing data yet. We haven't yet made that culture shift. That's not a norm yet to cite data specifically. So that we know that that's an incomplete picture of the data reuse. It's also an incomplete picture because there are so many different ways that data can be reused. It's not just citations, but maybe if it's used to inform public policy or decisions or to be used in a classroom setting for teaching. Those are things that wouldn't generate a citation because they're not things that result in a publication. And then we also know that the data set citation corpus that we work with is also incomplete because publishers don't always deliver data citations into that public registry of citations. So our information on citations is also incomplete. It's there, but it's not perfect. So that's, you know, that's one way that we are, you know, we're helping, but we're a little, I think, ahead of our time in doing that because the wider culture hasn't yet made it so that that data citation is the norm. And it's really, really tricky to track the impact in all the ways that your data might go out there into the world and make a difference.
True. Thank you, Sarah. It looks like we don't have any more questions from the chat. Also, from my editor, the Gav addressed all of them. Thank you very much, Sarah and Maria, for such an informative presentation. I'm sure the audience have also found it very, very helpful and enlightening. So with that, I think that brings us to the end of our presentation today. Thank you very much, everyone, for joining us. Let me just remind you that you can also get more information about this webinar and other presentations from our website at africaarchive.org. And this webinar series was co-organized by Ubuntu Net Alliance and as part of the ORCID Global Participation Program. So thank you very much, everyone, for joining us. See you on our next webinar. Bye.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you again. Really nice to meet you all. Thank you.
Like